last year in 2023, 50,000 Americans died of suicide, and that's the biggest number on record. This is just not a blanket stat. Like, there's a reason that this is happening.
There's a blind trust in the system. We blindly have trusted our doctors. Over 20 years ago, my life looked very different than it does today. I was happily married to my husband of almost 10 years, Woody. We traveled the world. We both had successful careers. And I get this call. And my dad's like, it's bad. It's bad. I remember him screaming. And I'm like, what do you mean it's bad? And he's like, Woody's dead. And I'm like, what do you mean Woody's dead? What do you mean Woody's dead? And I'm just like, what just happened? My dad's like, he goes, he's hanging. I'm like, what? He goes, he's hanging. The coroner called and asked us a question. She asked if Woody was taking any medication. The only medication Woody was taking was Zoloft, which is an antidepressant. She proceeded to say that she needed to take the bottle with her. It might have something to do with his death.
You're listening to the Visibly Fit podcast. Hey, I'm your host, Wendy Pett. And every week, I'll give you holistic, practical solutions for everyday issues related to nutrition, healing, functional fitness, and behavior modifications. As a naturopath, fitness expert, and wellness coach for over 20 years, my goal is to empower you to reach for greater health and to rise up to your next level of living in mind, body, and spirit. You were created with greatness in mind. It's time to own it. Are you with me? Then let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to the Visibly Fit podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Pett. You know, we've all seen the commercials that are pushing pharmaceuticals down our throat. And it's interesting because most of the commercials show some, I don't know, someone like riding a bike and they're riding along a beautiful path and they're just so happy. And, or it shows a couple and they're just walking and just so in love. And anyway, it just paints this picture, right? Which is so interesting. And then at the end of the commercial, we all know what happens. We hear the side effects, the disclaimer, and it's a long list of repercussions and side effects to the drug. And so I'm curious why we don't pay more attention to those side effects for those people that are on medication. And maybe you've considered it, but you haven't considered it fully. Well, I want to invite you to really listen in to this show and consider fully what you might be taking and see if you can start thinking in a more holistic way about your health. But today I have Kim Witczak, and she is an international drug safety advocate and speaker with over 25 years professional experience in advertising and marketing communications. She became involved in pharmaceutical drug safety issues after the sudden death of her husband in 2003 due to an undisclosed drug side effect of antidepressants. She was instrumental in helping to get FDA black box suicide warnings added to antidepressants in 2004 and 2006. And Kim has taken her personal experience and launched a national public awareness campaign through WoodyMatters.com. And it's a grassroots organization dedicated to make sure that everyday patient perspectives is presented or represented in healthcare conversations. Woody Matters put a human face on the real life, sometimes tragic consequences of our current flawed drug safety system. Kim has been featured in major news media such as Fortune, Reader's Digest, Consumer Reports, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Star Tribune, as well as subject of numerous local and national and international television news stories and documentaries. She has testified before U.S. Senate on FDA-related issues, as well as numerous FDA advisory committees. Kim co-organized the Selling Sickness, People Before Profits International Conference, which was held in Washington, D.C., bringing academic scholars, healthcare reformers, consumer organizations and advocates, lawyers, and progressive health journalists to develop strategies and solutions challenging the quote unquote selling of sickness. Today, she lectures about Big Pharma's spiderweb of influence on the healthcare system. Buckle up. You're going to want to hear everything that she says. And after doing this interview, I think I'm going to want to do another interview. It's that well done. So pay attention and let us know your thoughts after you've heard her story. Enjoy the show. Well, welcome to the Visibly Fit podcast, Kim Witsack. So glad to have you. Wow, I have been looking forward to this episode for a long time, just because of some things that have been bubbling up in our personal life. And I heard your story and I thought, man, I got to have her on the podcast. So thank you for being with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I love meeting new people and talking and telling the story. So,
and the fact that we're in the same state and pretty close to each other in proximity is pretty amazing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when I saw, I think it was your phone number or something. I'm like, wait, you're in Minnesota? Like, and so it's really fun because I do podcast interviews with people all over the world. And to have somebody that's literally in my backyard, it's really fun. And yet it seems far away because we're on virtual, but I'm glad
which is
to know
weird, but we're going to meet sometime. We're going to meet sometime. Absolutely. In person, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, good. Well, you know, I wanted to have you on. You know, last year in 2023, 50,000 Americans died of suicide, and that's the biggest number on record, right? And so I see that, you know, this is just not a blanket stat. Like, there's a reason that this is happening. And so I want to share your story and just kind of connect the dots on some levels and allow some people that maybe have never thought about the repercussions of pharmaceutical drugs and their health to maybe give it a different, lens, if you will. So if you want to share your story first and just kind of we'll unpack it as we go.
Sure. Well, I like to call myself the accidental advocate. You'll hear me say that a lot. And that's because I never chose to do drug safety advocacy work that I do today. However, I always say that sometimes our greatest purposes choose us. And that's exactly what happened. So on August 6, 2003, so over 20 years ago, my life looked very different than it does today. I was happily married to my husband of almost 10 years, Woody. We traveled the world. We both had successful careers. And we were just starting to talk about having a family. And Woody had just started his dream job of in a startup company. He was having trouble sleeping. And so he went to his doctor, who it's his doctor that he's gone to for years. I always said Wood was kind of like a Humpty Dumpty, you know, if he broke, he was an athlete. So like if he broke and, you know, broke something, he'd go get it fixed. So he got stitches because somebody bit his head in basketball, you know, so he's had that kind of a, yeah. So, I mean, he's just one of those guys that then anytime, but you know, you get hurt when you're an athlete, right? So yeah, he had that attitude of just going, going and seeing his doctor. And so he went to see his doctor and was given and told him he was having trouble sleeping. And the doctor gave him a 3-week sample pack of an antidepressant Zoloft and said it would take the edge off and help him sleep. I happened to be out of the country the first 3 weeks that he was on this drug. And so I didn't see what was happening. And this sample pack that Woody got also automatically doubled the dose after week one. It was just like in a paper bag, like, here's some samples, take this, try this. This should, help take the edge off.
And did he tell you, real quick, did he tell you that he was taking the drug even though you were out of the country? Did he inform you over the phone and tell you?
I mean, you know, I think he said he got some medicine, but, you know, truthfully,
yeah,
I didn't go investigate. And, obviously I know things very differently today. But back then, no, I'm just assuming, all right, that's cool, yeah. And I'm down in New Zealand on a big shoot. I'm in advertising. And so I'm down there having the time of my life. Wood's here. And I remember, like, I was super excited. So 3 weeks later, I come back and I walk in our kitchen, back in our, I was in the kitchen. He walks in. He had a blue dress shirt on with a white undershirt underneath, completely drenched through. And he was crying, and I mean, more like bawling. He dropped his bag at the back door, fell into a fetal position on our floor in front of our dishwasher, and kept going like this, Kim, you got to help me. I don't know what's happening to me. My head's outside my body. You got to help me. And he's rocking back and forth. And I'm like,
oh my word.
Like, I literally have never seen that ever. And so we calmed him down. We prayed, we did yoga breathing. And he eventually called his doctor and told him he had this head outside the body. And the doctor said, oh, you got to give it 4 to 6 weeks to kick in the drug. And so, all right. So didn't think anything of it. You know, we did all the things you're supposed to do. And the next week of Wood's life, every day, night he would come home and he'd be like, Kim, what do you think about hypnosis? What do you think about acupuncture? Everything was about beat this feeling in his head. And so,
he was miserable.
And he also, I remember him saying, I don't think I can handle one of these episodes. Like, it was, must have been horrific, right? And so I, but there was no cause for me to like be concerned other than, you know, that we, that he was already like, you know, talking about, I'm going to beat this feeling in my head. And again, it was my busy time of the year for work. So I headed out of town on, you know, August 4th. And I, you know, was going to be gone for a week. And I call Woody on August 6th, and I'm calling him all morning because I had a funny dream to tell him in the morning. And then finally all day, I kept calling, sent him an email. Then I call our voicemail at home, and the guys that Woody was working with had left him a message saying, hey, Tim, where are you? We've got a huge meeting tomorrow. And I was like, God, something's not right. Like, there's no, like, this doesn't make sense. And so finally around like 8 o'clock Minneapolis time, I call my dad and I go, hey dad, will you do me a favor? Will you go over and just check on our house and see if Woody, like, you know, he's been having trouble sleeping. Like maybe he fell and hit his head or something, but you know, he isn't, he wasn't at this meeting they were having. So my dad goes over to our house and that's the phone call I get. And I'm still in the office in the studio. And I get this call. My dad's like, it's bad. It's bad. I remember him screaming. And I'm like, what do you mean it's bad? And he's like, Woody's dead. And I'm like, what do you mean Woody's dead? What do you mean Woody's dead? And I'm just like, what just happened? My dad's like, he goes, he's hanging. I'm like, what? He goes, he's hanging. And he was hanging from the rafters in our garage. And it was probably one of the most horrific. I'll never forget that call. And I can't imagine my dad having to make that call to me and discovering what he did. And, you know, so that really in one, I always say we're all one phone call away from like life changing forever. And that was my one phone call. That night that, so I remember being out in the studio. I had to come back into the office and tell the people. I'm like, somebody bring me back to the hotel. I didn't even tell them what had happened yet because I was still like
in shock.
Yeah. And, you know, because I had to figure out how I was getting back from Detroit back to Minneapolis. And that night when I was in the hotel room trying to figure it out, the coroner called and asked us a question. She asked if Woody was taking any medication. And the only medication Woody was taking was Zoloft. And she proceeded to say,
antidepressant,
which is an antidepressant. She proceeded to say she might, that she needed to take the bottle with her. It might have something to do with his death. And so that was kind of like clue number one that the coroner actually even said, like, we might have to take it with us. And that was in 2003. And ironically, the other, because Woody left no note, and we both traveled so much for work that we always left notes. We checked in with each other. We left notes. And so I'm like, wait, Woody went on the biggest trip of his life and he didn't leave a message or a note. Well, you know, the first, you know, I always say that that coroner question was clue number one. And the other clue was the front page of our newspaper had an article that said the UK finds link between antidepressants and suicide in teens. And so really that, along with, you know, this deep, deep intuitive, like everything in my body was like, there is something that makes no sense because Woody loved life. We had just like booked our 10-year anniversary trip. We were, you know, the kids, we just booked our vacation.
So he wasn't even, he wasn't even depressed. He went to the doctor because he wasn't sleeping. And this is what the doctor prescribed.
Yeah. He had no history of depression. Yeah. He had no history of depression. He had no history of mental illness or any of that. He just couldn't sleep. You know, he just started this dream job. And, you know that I always call it now because I'm one of these people that wakes up at a 3 a.m., the wake up call, the 3 a.m. Being an entrepreneur is not a mental health or mental illness. Like, he was so right. excited about this job. And so everything in me was like, this doesn't make any sense. But you know,
and he wasn't drinking with the drugs. No, he wasn't any of that. Yeah
So if you actually know if you actually know who Woody was, like, his body, he could have one drink, two made him drunk. He couldn't drink coffee, so he literally drank water, orange juice, and iced tea. Like, that was him. He couldn't take NyQuil because NyQuil would make him like completely loopy. So he never took that. And he also was a guy that found out when his appendix, when he was a little boy, ruptured, that he is deathly allergic to penicillin. So he obviously had this sensitive body. Yeah, that, I mean, again, but we never thought anything of it. And, you know, because the drug at the time was, you know, first of all, it was given to him by his doctor. And, you know, which
and people
trust
their doctors, right?
Yep, you trust. Yeah. And it's sold and advertised as safe and effective. That's the word. Mm-hmm. And I keep going safe and effective in my quotes. And then and then it was FDA approved. And so, you know, why would you question? But, you know, really, again, everything in my body said, this doesn't make sense. And so when the coroner and my brother-in-law at this time, my sister's husband, and, you know, my dad had called over our whole family and everybody's at our house that night. And even my brother-in-law was like, something doesn't make sense. So he goes home that night and Googles Zoloft and suicide. Had no idea that the FDA in 1991 had a hearing on the emergence of violence and suicide with Prozac. And at that point did nothing. And now now in 2003, we now have Zoloft and Paxil, and it's approved for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and you look at what's going on in this world right now and how it's just being, you know, prescribed, like thrown out like pieces of candy, right, to these young kids.
Yeah.
And it's no wonder that things are breaking down in our society because they are mentally not well. And the pharmaceutical remedy that they're trying to prescribe is not the remedy. And so, well, let's go back more into just kind of, you know, the fact that it's FDA approved, you know, We can't always rely on it saying FDA approved, right, Kim?
Right. You know, that is the one thing that I learned is that we cannot just because, and you know, it's interesting. Today, I actually sit on the FDA Psychopharmacologic Advisory Committee as the consumer representative. So I see how drugs, and this is the same committee that in 1991 did not do their job because they at that point should have put warnings on when it was just Prozac on the market. So, you know, it's really interesting watching and, you know, and I've learned a lot over the last 20 years and seeing how drugs come to market, how advertising like my business has greatly influenced the way pharmaceuticals are, you know, even sold, positioned, how marketing drives even a lot of the stuff before it goes to the FDA, how Congress plays a role in it. I mean, it is
definitely here and New Zealand.
Yeah, we're the only two countries here in New Zealand. And so, but you also look at like all the things and how marketing has influenced everything that our doctors, that they believe, like, ghostwriting, which is a lot of the medical journals that, you know, our doctors read, have been written actually by ghostwriters that the pharmaceutical companies have actually hired to write and put journals. And these are the journals that our doctors. And so, you know, one of the big things and how I kind of just started discovering all this is I had a big, you know, I mean, almost immediately we started going out to DC and met with members of Congress and helped. We were pretty involved in the congressional investigations that looked at antidepressants and suicide and the FDA's role and how they kept their internal scientists for bringing up information that they saw in the safety and the drug safety side of the FDA. I also had a wrongful death failure to warn lawsuit against Pfizer. So we were able to get all these documents out that kind of showed a different story than what was being painted to us, and also what the FDA knew and Pfizer knew about these medications and didn't tell anybody, including the doctors.
Right. And so the goal is for people to really understand, and you're not against the medical field and pharmaceuticals altogether. I get that, but we've got to do our homework. We have to do our due diligence and not just assume that, okay, well, the doctor said, and I'm just going to trust that, and it's FDA approved. I'm just going to trust that and not look for the easy way out all the time. And especially, like you mentioned, with the marketing, it's just, we see it all the time. I don't care what you're watching on television. There is always going to be some sort of pharmaceutical company that you're going, or even supplemental, you know, a supplement company that is going to, you know, share why they're so great and why you should do it. And then they're going to have their little disclaimer at the bottom. But for some reason, and I just kind of want your take on this. Why do you think now more than ever, it seems like people, or maybe it's just because of the past 2023 stats that I gave on suicide and that kind of thing. But why do you think, and even with the levels of depression, why do you think people aren't really doing their due diligence? They're just kind of taking the lazy way out and doing what the doctor says.
Well, I think for starters, there's a blind trust in the system. We blindly have trusted our doctors, and why would our doctor ever give us something that would hurt us, right? I mean, that's kind of the belief. I have subsequently known to always challenge. I think that is, and everywhere we turn, you know, right now, especially, you know, you look at the last couple of years through a pandemic, everything is thrown out a pill solution, and we're not really giving tools. Like, I go back to even looking at Woody. Should medication have been the first, you know, no. line of treatment for
I'm
Woody?
I'm going to say like, no.
There are a lot of things that we should have tried first. And so I always say that there are a lot of things. And, you know, I also think this idea of that life's not supposed to be hard, especially in the mental health categories of things and antidepressants and anxiety and depression and whatnot. Like there's this belief that life's not supposed to be hard, or that it might be a brain chemical that's causing this. And so, you know, even I look back after Wood died, and I was at the doctor for my yearly, and she said, "Do you think you need something?" And I was like, "Well, I think the drug is what killed him."
But oh, like she was asking you if you needed an antidepressant?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And then I literally said to her, I go, "Aren't I supposed to hurt? My husband just died."
Yeah.
And she said, "Yeah, but you don't need to." And I was like, wow. And so I think that was 20 years ago. And I think now with like the pressures that we have with the pandemic and social media and you know, everybody keeps, you know, playing. Like I just literally listening to somebody who was telling me that kids now are calling antidepressant hot girl pills. And it's this whole Gen Z. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have been working for 20 years of my life. I've never gotten paid for this work. And I'm like, everything that I've done, it seems like we're unwinding and we're going backwards. And so I think, you know, it's one of those things with any pill. Like I am absolutely not anti-drug, any of that. But what I am is pro-transparency, pro-accountability, pro-information. you know, yes. And also don't blindly trust. Trust me.
Right.
I mean, I've lived it. We blindly trusted. And unfortunately, I've met so many other people in the system that have done the exact same thing. And harms right now are, and deaths and harms from medicines are the third leading cause of death. And we just celebrated, or I don't know if celebrated is the right word, but it was the third annual day focused on adverse harms and events in medicine. And so I think it's a lot more common. It's not just antidepressants. It's medicines in general.
Right.
And so I think,
well, I was talking to you before the interview about my mother-in-law and how she was in a nursing home for just a short little window before we got hospice in place and that kind of thing. And the meds that they gave her, I mean, it was crazy. It was, you know, Ativan and Halidol and all these things. And she literally was hallucinating. She was drooling. She was having nightmares. She was, couldn't feed herself, couldn't function at all. And that's not her. And so when we got, and so we were being advocates and saying, no, get her off of this. Why is she even on? And once we removed that drug, and of course it took about 36 hours to get out of her system, she was herself again. It was so disheartening. And I thought about, like, you know, the elderly that don't have a voice, right? Or they don't have people around them that can be an advocate. You know, what would you say on those terms? Because we need our young people to have advocates and our seniors to have advocates.
Absolutely.
What would you tell somebody? Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised at the story you just said about your mother-in-law. I have heard that numerous times, where especially in the nursing homes where they're being, handed all, these are serious mind altering. And some people say chemical straight jackets that literally put somebody to, like, so they're numb because they don't have enough staffing. Like, drugs should not be a replacement for staffing. So I think everybody who has, they should not be a replacement because of your, as a nursing home, you don't have enough staff. That's not our problem. Do not be giving, because I bet how many people, if they don't have an advocate for, like, you know, but how many people aren't even aware, again, because, like, oh, the doctor told us that you need this medication. But then when you actually, so one of the things that I always say is find out why they're getting, like, what kind of drug is that? Halidol, Ativan. I've heard Seroquel. I've heard Zyprexa. Right. And, you know, one of the people that does do a lot of advocacy now and for the elderly specific, because her father-in-law was kind of like yours, but at the ER was given all of these medicines and had a fall. And the fall is what put him in the nursing home. And then he eventually went downhill within, like, a couple of weeks and passed away.
Sure.
But then they went back and looked at the medicine, and she was like, did you know they gave my dad a Zyprexa and a Seroquel, which is a antipsychotic? And so she didn't even know, like, I didn't really know that Zoloft was an antidepressant. She didn't know that it was an antipsychotic. And so those are the kind of things that I think we have to, whether it's our parent or an in-law, is that we have to ask these questions, do the research, and also ask, like, why are you giving my loved one Halidol? Like, again,
I don't necessarily think it was a staffing issue. I think it was just, that was just kind of what they were, that's what they're programmed to kind of do. It's part of standard of care. And so you're like, whoa, this is standard of care? This is insane. And so I'm just so the timing of you coming on is just, like, near and dear to my heart. And I'm so sorry that you've gone through what you've gone through with Woody. And I know it's been quite some time, but you never get over a loss like that, right? But I'm just so proud of you for taking this mission on. And I know it was just kind of, this purpose has just become your calling. But how would you say, how has it affected your spiritual life? Or are you a faith-filled person? Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, first of all, I can't imagine going through this without having faith. like this whole experience in my life. Like I, you know, I'm lucky enough that I grew up going, you know, with parents that brought us to church. And I don't think I ever really understood what like a relationship was, right? Until I got older. Yeah. But, you know, I've heard that, those words. But I'll never forget, like after Woody's, when he died, like we didn't have any kids. Like it was just me now at my house. And it was like days after, it was days after Woody's funeral, and we had all these big life-size posters of Woody in the basement, and I'm in and bawling my eyes out and grabbing my heart. Like I literally wanted to, like heartache's real, grief's real, yeah. All of that's real for people. And it, you know, it always gets me. But I was like trying to claw it out because it hurts so bad. And I kept praying, God, take my pain and use it. It does me no good. I just kept praying that over and over, like take my pain and use it. And I literally didn't know what that prayer was going to mean. You know, I was just like, take this out of my, like, get it out of me. And, you know, so subsequently I started going to, I went to suicide support group once and I felt nothing from them. Like I kept going, well, I think it was a drug. And they're all like, or like, oh, you poor little widow, you're just making up excuses. Oh, I'm like, okay, this is not going to be helpful for me. And so somebody said, how about grief share at church? And so I went to grief share program at church, which anybody who's going through grief, that program was amazing. It's like a, you know, and I think it's a world, you know, I think it's definitely a nationwide program at different churches, but that for me was super, super important. And is to know that I might not understand truly why it had to happen, but I, at some point I had to understand that I can't ask why, because I might not get the answer to the why. But I can do and rely.
Not on this side of heaven.
Not on this side of the heaven. And I remember it's a verse that they actually talked a lot about in Grief Share. And that was really, you know, really helpful. But I also realized that if I didn't have faith, like that's the only thing that got me through. And I also have found that that our lives are like, we're not just physical beings. You know, we're mental, physical, and spiritual. So, and that spiritual piece, I think, is a really important piece and probably the most important piece in our overall health that really often gets overlooked. And so for me, that that is something that I continually work on and have that relationship. But I also feel super, and for those who might not believe or kind of question, I will tell you, you know, I know faith is what, where you have to trust. And even though you might not see it with your own eyes, you know, we just had Easter, but I will tell you, it was the craziest thing that God gave, and it probably is not crazy. But so my brother-in-law and I, who's my sister's husband, who became my partner in going out to DC all the time. And we were out there every other week for those first 3 years after Woody died. But it was, so Woody, when he died, he always said, when I die, like, I want my ashes thrown in Lake Michigan, because that's where we used to live. And so it was probably 6 weeks after Woody died, and we were doing a service in Chicago, and we had Woody's ashes, and I'm holding this box, and I'm like, I cannot believe this is us. And it was just my brother-in-law and I at the side of the boat, in the middle of Lake Michigan, mind you. And all of a sudden, I look over the edge of the boat, like literally 5 feet, like right there. And there's this red book floating like this. And I,
a red book.
And it was a red book, open face. Huh. And I go, does that say what I think it does? And he goes, yeah. In gold letters, it said the Holy Bible. And it
I just have chills, Kim.
Literally floated right by us. And at that moment, I'm like, oh yeah, God's real. Like at that, was saying, it was unbelievable. And because we were the ones where it was amazing, because, you know, at this time, like I'm not one that stirred the pot. Like, I would never go take on Pfizer and the FDA. I could care less. Like, I was the least likely person that would ever in a million years.
But that's who God uses, Kim. The least likely becomes the most likely. You see in stories all throughout his word.
Yeah. And so that's what I've come to, and that's what I came to see. But because I'd be like, whoa. And so all those times that we would fly back and forth over DC or to go out to DC and I'm getting ready for like a big Senate hearing or, you know, all my legal stuff, I would look down and go, wow, God, of all places, like right there in the middle, it's like a body of, it's like an ocean, right? And it was literally right in front of us. And the only two people that saw it was Eric and I, because Eric, my brother-in-law, also had to be obedient because he was the one that put it all together and was the one that presented the idea that he goes, I think I figured out what happened to Kim's. And so if it wasn't for Eric, who was obedient, and then me, you know, and to see the, like, I think God was telling both of us, like, it's yours. Mm-hmm. And now I say that that Bible is not really for me. It's for other people, right? To tell that story. Mm. Because he's real. Like, there's no way you cannot, like, say it's not real when you saw that Bible.
Yeah. And you didn't just see it. Both of you saw it. Like, that's how, both of us. That's how loving our God is. He knew the kind of sign, if you will, that you needed to see in order to take this baton and run with it. Because on the, on, when you do get to heaven, you will be seeing the lives that you affected because you took this on. Like, I just want to cry. I'm so proud of you. I don't even know you that well, but oh my goodness. Thank you for heeding to the call, because not too many people would, Kim. Like, I mean, you got me crying. Not too many people would. And I'm, no, it's so good, because that's how much our God is so loving and so kind and so gracious that he would give you both that, that loving sign like that. And he knew that would fuel your fire too.
I think it's the only way. And I remember, like, when we got off the boat, and it was Woody's brother, who's a Chicago cop, actually was the one that arranged the Chicago search and rescue boat to take us out in the middle of the lake. And afterwards we came back and there, you know, back to the police station. And I said, can I ask you a question? And this to the cop. And he goes, ma'am, I've been doing, I go, have you ever like caught a Bible out of the Lake Michigan? And he goes, ma'am, I've been head of search and rescue for 25 years. I have never seen a Bible because books don't float. And he was like, yeah, you idiot. And so I was just,
okay,
I knew
funny.
It was hilarious. And it was so classic, like a Chicago cop, but he's right. Books don't float. They sink. And I mean, so really, I think you are so right that.
But
that
hope floats.
That's a good one. Hope does float. Yep. And you know, I like, as I said, for my own healing, like that right there, it didn't take away, I mean, it took away, you know, some of the pain, but like there were, you know, for me personally, I did have to, I suffered the great loss, but then so have a lot of other people in this world. Like I am, you know, when we think that we're not going to get impacted by something in our lives, like that's a lie that we've been told, because why wouldn't it not happen to me? Like why wouldn't it, like that things happen in life, right? And so I just had to accept. And once I actually accepted that this is what happened and I stopped fighting what happened, is really when things, I just surrendered to, it is what happened, and I will maybe not ever understand why, but I also have come to realize 20 years later, it almost had to be somebody like Woody who had no history, because they couldn't trust me. They tried to, like, during those legal litigations, they would try to, like, you know, paint it on people like, oh, well, you know, we didn't have marital problems, we didn't have money problems, we didn't have depression problems. So they couldn't blame Woody. And so it almost had to be somebody like Woody who was super clean, and somebody like me that and Eric who took this on initially. And really 20 years later, it's way bigger than just antidepressants. It's our medical system. It's all of the things that I will continue, that's completely being driven by like money and not necessarily by putting lives first.
Right. Oh, Kim, I have such great admiration and respect for you. I just really do. And I'm so grateful that you're doing what you're doing. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done, right? I mean, you're fighting, you know, a Goliath, but guess what? You know,
I always say David beat Goliath, and I have to keep,
exactly.
Telling that story to all of mine, because I've met so many people over the years who've been in situations like me and, or feel like they can't take it on. I'm like, it's so big. And I go, yeah, but you have to remember, like, David beat Goliath, and our God is way bigger.
Right.
And so like,
that's right.
And so you couldn't do this work without faith. I don't know how people could ever do this work without faith. Ever.
Right. Right.
Because it's,
and because
so
it's
big.
Not like it's right. And it's not like it's a, I mean, you're doing some hardcore work. It's not like you're going in, it's all happy go lucky work. No, you rely on the joy of the Lord as your strength, because I'm sure there are moments where you feel weary. You feel maybe, discouraged, right?
I have a lot of, there have been plenty of times that I have wanted to quit. And I have tried, you know, especially after some of the FDA, I get name called. Like, it challenges every part of who I've been. Like, you know, name calling, you know, like, oh, she's this. I'm like, I am. Like, just because I don't fit the narrative, and I will, or she doesn't care about people because she's looking at, she says no, like on FDA stuff. I'm like, yeah, because the drug isn't safe. So I'm going to say it's not about, I actually am looking out for people, but it's the industry on the other side that will come. And so like the name calling, I've had to like, they flip it. And so I have to, I many times have wanted to quit, but then I'll get a call or I'll get an email from somebody who said, you know, we figured out what happened to our loved one, or this happened. Thank you. And we went and did our research. We got our kids off of these drugs. Like, so then I'm like, oh, all right, well, then that made it worth it, you know, because I always said I don't ever want, like Woody used to always say, his mantra was, I will never judge my life by how much money I make, or my career will be based on my family, my friends, and leaving the world a better place. And so I'm like, oh, Woody, I'm going to make sure that your death was not in vain.
That's so good, Kim. Yeah, and again, on this side of heaven, you'll never know of the lives that Woody and you have saved, and Eric, right? Because of being obedient to the call, and with Woody's unfortunate, you know, way in which he felt like he needed relief, but it's going to be used for God's good and His glory, right?
Yeah,
so I know you
absolutely
put the stake in the ground for that. So that's so good. Well, I am honored to have had this time with you. Thank you very much. Is there something that you would like to leave us with? Is there a certain thing that you're working on right now, a policy perhaps, or something that to get in place that can help us all feel better about what's going on? I mean, obviously, we all need to do our own research and do our own due diligence. And in my mind, as a naturopath, take more holistic, natural measures. But do you have anything that you'd like to share with what you're working on?
I would say one thing is, if there are harms and things, and you've had your own experience, do not be afraid to share it. Because I think one of the reasons where we don't understand how big this problem really is, and, you know, I used to never really pay attention to it, it's because they happen one-offs, right? And it's not until we connect or bravely tell our stories. And I think I say that is first and foremost, bravely tell your story. Like, I will think about your, you know, your mother-in-law, where you talked about all of that medicine. That will come with me as I'm doing my work going forward. So, because now I've heard another story and another story. So I think that is one thing. Don't be afraid to also challenge when something doesn't feel right, and to listen intuitively to ourselves. So that would be because our bodies and the way we were designed, divinely designed, that we have a lot more wisdom in here when we pay attention to our bodies. And so that would be one thing. And then in terms of my work, you know, I'm working on a project with somebody who wrote the book Selling Sickness, and it's really unwinding the unselling of sickness, because it's really trying to, you know, highlight the issues. And that book was written 20 years ago, and it's now like, what's different, and that we need to help write the system. And my term, and then of course follow the FDA. You know, always do your research. You know, I'm getting ready to go out there again, and I'm often one of the only no votes. And I do it not because I don't want to see life-saving medicines get on the market. I do it because I don't think the data is there, and there's too much commercial interest that we're putting profits before people. So that would be, you know, just some of the things that I'm working on. So.
Yeah, just a couple of little things. Yeah, well, that's huge. And yeah, that is a big issue, the profits before people. So thank you for being that no vote so often. We appreciate you. Thank you for your time, and God bless you, friend. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Visibly Fit podcast. What a show, right? Oh my goodness. I hope you really enjoyed the show, because it's eye-opening for maybe some of you, but I invite you to go to woodymatters.com. That is Kim Witsack's website, and you can learn so much more there and learn more about Woody and all that he went through. But educate yourself. Educate yourself. I can't stress it enough. And after we got done with the interview, Kim and I were talking for a while, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I think I'm going to need you on again, because she was just sharing stuff that is vital for you to hear. So hopefully I'll have her on again at some point. But let me know in the comments if you enjoyed the show, what your thoughts are, and maybe we can help answer some questions. Maybe you're kind of struggling, wondering if you should be on a certain medication or not, or that kind of thing. So we're here to help. I mean, Kim is just, she's the accidental advocate. And I am so happy that she took on this job. What a job it is. So pray for her. Pray for Kim and all that she's doing to make this world a better place as far as pharmaceutical life is concerned. All right. Well, if you are tuning in and you are in a place where you're looking to get healthy and well, and you are ready to take serious, massive action, take action in a natural, holistic way, go to getvisiblyfit.com and I can assist you with your weight release, getting off of those unhealthy medications, and getting you on the path of wholeness and healing. Go to getvisiblyfit.com and start that 7-week Visibly Fit program today. I look forward to seeing you there. But thanks so much for tuning into this episode. Again, share it with others, give a rating and a review, and we will catch you next time right here on the Visibly Fit podcast. Take care. Be blessed. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a wrap for today's show. So thank you so much for tuning in. I love spending this time with you. To learn more and get more free resources, just head on over to wendypet.com. And thank you in advance for sharing this episode and this podcast, following and subscribing not only to this podcast, but finding me on social media, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you are, I'm probably there too. Until next week and our next podcast time together, make it a Visibly Fit day.